again, this episode we are going to be talking about our favorite ships from Shakespeare's plays, because we are super cool and academic like that. And we are your usual Bardolatry crew, so I'm Gabs.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Olivia.
And I guess we'll just kind of jump straight into it, because there's not a lot of background for this. We basically just found these couples coming up multiple times. Mm-hmm. Mostly just me mentioning Benvolio and Mercutio like every episode. So then we decided this would be a fun low-level research topic, since all of us just took finals and did not have time to do that. So let's go ahead. I guess I can kick off with my flagship couple,
okay,
if you guys don't mind.
Sure.
I'm sorry, inspiration. So Mercutio and Benvolio from Romeo and Juliet, but of course. This actually first came about because when I was in high school, one of our assignments 1 year after we read Romeo and Juliet is we had to act a scene from the play with other people from the class. And a really good friend of mine and I decided that we thought Mercutio and Benvolio were just super cool characters, so we of course wanted to do Act 3, Scene 1, where Mercutio gets stabbed, because why wouldn't you want to do that scene? So we managed to snipe it away from everyone else in the class and find a couple other people. And I was Mercutio and my friend was Benvolio, and we'd just walk around the school yelling lines at each other all the time, having a great time. And sometime during all that rehearsal, we just decided between the two of us that they were secretly a couple. And when Benvolio drags Mercutio off stage for his death, then they have this, you know, loving death scene between the two of them that you don't get to see. The other reason we decided that it was actually a thing is because after the scene where Benvolio tells everyone what happened, mm-hmm, he actually just disappears from the play. So we thought he probably went, you know, took like a vow of loneliness or something, because he was so sad, and just kind of fades out and does whatever. I forgot to double check this, I'm pretty sure he doesn't show up again after that scene. So that made a fairly compelling argument to the two of us. And I have just kind of developed that over the years more and more. I now just kind of hope that it's real. I really like the idea of, you know, you have the tragic love story of Romeo and Juliet, but then unbeknownst to the audience, there's this even more tragic love story, because it's compounded by the fact that it's two men, and that at the time would not have been cool, so.
Who actually have known each other for more than 4 days.
Yeah, they're great friends, they have scenes with just the two of them talking, bantering. Yeah. I think it works.
I ship it.
Yeah, I can definitely totally see that, and I would love to see, you know, a spin-off. Although, that's where you should talk about that you actually have done spin-offs of that, haven't you?
Yeah, my goal in life is to basically write Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead, but for Mercutio and Benvolio. That's the writing project I might work on in this winter break. Ooh, I've already written, like, 10,000 words of it, and it's pretty much just ridiculous, but
as it should be. Actually, that brings up an interesting argument that we should stage, or someone should stage, Romeo and Juliet from the other character's point of view. Because you get their opinions a little bit, but it's mostly about Romeo and Juliet. But I really just want all of his friends to be like, Romeo, you're being stupid, and Juliet, wake up.
You are an idiot.
But when you do think about it, like, the much bigger picture of Romeo and Juliet is the family feud and the hatred and the prejudice and what it does to people, and not only what it does to Romeo and Juliet, but what it does to their families. I mean, Mercutio is not even related, and he dies because of this whole feud. So there are many tragedies going on there. So I think that's a very compelling argument that, you know, Romeo and Juliet weren't the only ones
affected by it. Yeah, and I love the idea of someone telling the story of, because I think at the beginning of Romeo and Juliet, they say, oh, this is the third time you fought on the streets.
Yeah.
So I love the idea of someone telling the story of, you know, what happened in the first two fights? Did people die? Mm-hmm. What's going on there? And in my own, like, personal headcanon again, I have this, Romeo kind of has this list of women that he falls desperately in love with every, you know, like, 6 months. And Benvolio and Mercutio just kind of humor him, but they... are secretly just like, you're an idiot. Yeah. So at the beginning of Romeo and Juliet, when he's talking about Rosalind, Bevo's like, I heard this a million times before, I don't care. When he moves on to Juliet, that's what Romeo does.
I totally accept that as canon. Me too. That's what it sounds like.
That's what it feels like. That actually, what is it? Oh, it's Leonardo DiCaprio film version of the film, and he has the notebook and he's like writing Rosalind's name. Now in my head I pictured it as an address book, and he's just going down the list like, that was last Tuesday, that's gonna be in a month or so. Oh, Juliet, I haven't fallen in love with her yet, let's do that.
All right. Gotta go to that party.
Yeah, but no, I accept that too as fact.
Mercutio's just such a great character. I think basing Romeo into it from his point of view would just be interesting.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think a lot of people would like to see that, because he definitely is, I'd say he's probably the most memorable character in that that play.
I remember when we read that play in high school, our teacher told us Juliet is the coveted female role for that play, but most actors actually want to get Mercutio and not Romeo.
Oh god, yeah.
And if you get Mercutio, that actually means you were the best addition and not, but a lot of times, because TV shows like saying, oh, let's set up this romantic whatever and have high schoolers put this on, the guy always gets Romeo so that he has to kiss the girl. And then there's this huge thing, but really he would be Mercutio.
Yeah.
Because
his
character's so much fun. So.
Exactly.
So yeah, anyway, I'm super pro that, and will probably one day self-publish my Shakespeare fanfic on Amazon, so just keep an eye out for that, guys.
Should. I wish! I was just gonna say, I wish that Shakespeare anthologies had, like, ancillary other stories, like Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are Dead, and, like, prominent fanfic of the plays in there with them.
Yeah.
So you could read it from different perspectives.
I mean, if you think about it, I mean, Shakespeare's work itself is kind of like
fanfiction.
So it's okay. It's cool.
Well, his King Lear is essentially fanfic. I was listening to a history podcast the other day that was talking about how he totally changed the ending of it. And the audience at the time was like, what the fuck? Because he killed everyone.
Right.
In the original version, I think Cordelia lives.
Yeah, and that actually brings up another fanfic point of a made-up ship, and that someone felt that this was an adaptation in the 1800s. I don't know who did it or who wrote it, but that person strongly felt that Cordelia should live and that she should end up with Edgar. So he rewrote the ending, so she and Edgar actually end up together.
Nice. So Victorian ship, Cordelia, Edgar.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess they're both kind of good to the point of obnoxiousness occasionally. Yeah.
And they're paired with that other sibling that's just the exact opposite of them in every conceivable
human,
way.
Yeah, I mean, it seems fitting. I've heard of worse, you know. There are worse existing ships.
So if King Lear was a modern day YA novel, people would ship Cordelia and Edmund, though.
Oh yeah.
Good girl, bad boy. Sure.
Totally.
For sure.
All right. Well, I mean, speaking of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, our dad.
Should we talk about?
Okay, yeah, we might as well.
We might as well touch on it while we're here.
Basically, that play is the only reason I ship Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, because otherwise there's not really a reason to even care about those characters.
They're really not in the actual play enough to get, and then they just get killed off, and you're like, oh, well, I guess they're gone now.
Okay, sucked.
Yeah, you feel bad for them, but you don't really understand them as characters. They aren't really given that. And you're too busy watching Hamlet run around pretending he's crazy to notice.
Yeah, I feel like in a modern production, if someone decided to play them off as a gay couple, they would just be the comic relief, like, stereotype gay couple, so...
Yeah, you'd have to be careful if... Or you'd have to portray them in a different way, somehow.
Yeah. But in Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, are dead?
Yeah.
Excuse me? There's an end to that play title? It totally works, in my opinion.
I actually haven't seen it.
It's pretty good.
Is it good?
There's a movie adaptation with Gary Oldman as Rosencrantz and Tim Roth as Guildenstern.
Nice.
And that was the first. I saw a live production of it, like a high school production of it, because my brother was actually Rosencrantz in the play. But so that I did not ship because he was my brother and I was like, that's weird. Be in the movie version.
Also Gary Oldman.
Yeah.
Is pretty phenomenal.
I would definitely recommend watching like a live version in the movie, because I feel like reading it, it's a very existential, like
weird,
like meta play, and I feel like it's just translated a lot better when you actually watch it and see the characters bounce off each other. So
yeah,
because there's this whole ongoing gag where Rosencrantz and Guildenstern kind of have this wordplay game where they gain points by outwitting each other, and then they will like say scores in the middle of the conversation. And when you're watching it, it makes total sense, but I bet on the page it's does not make as much sense.
My college roommate read it, I think, over winter break 1 year, and I was surprised because she's not a huge Shakespeare person, and she was like, don't read it. I was like, okay. Okay, I'll just watch it then.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend watching it. Tom Stoppard just writes weird plays. I read another play of his for a class that was really good, but also I think would probably make way more sense if you actually watched it. So
I mean, that's their plays. I mean, they're supposed to be played, but
fair enough.
Although, about what is it about Rosencrantz and Guildenstern that, because, you know, I always looked at them as kind of just, it's hard to explain their... I mean, they complement each other, but I, like, what to you makes it, like, romantic? Like, what to you makes it have, like, sexual subtext?
You know, I don't know if I would even go so far as to say sexual subtext, but I like the goofy balanced with the straight man, and I think I just like that rapport so much in my brain. I'm like, they could be a couple. But I guess I ship them in a way that's more like, I hope they're best friends forever, as opposed to, because I was just thinking about, do I imagine Rosencrantz and Guildenstern having sex? Well, I don't actually know if I do, which is a good point. So it might just, it might just be more a product of, I liked those actors and like the way the characters bounce off of each other. And I do kind of like the dynamic in fiction of one character's really annoyed by another character, but also kind of secretly is the hots for them, which I think is kind
of... That's, like, the basis of all my bookship relationships.
I think you kind of argue Guildenstern's doing that, because Rosencrantz is always driving him crazy, but then maybe a little bit he likes him. So maybe they're not even, like, a couple. They're just an unrealized possible thing.
And that's... I think that's the way it should be. I think in that kind of relationship, it's not satisfying if they actually get
together. If they were together.
Which actually, I'm gonna change the subject, which brings me to characters that annoy each other but secretly like each other.
Mm-hmm.
Benedict and Beatrice. I mean, who does not ship them? I mean, frankly, they are the only hetero couple, at least, that I actually ship
In canon.
In canon. I mean...
Yeah, I'm really happy they're in canon. And paired with Hero and Claudio, it's just such a breath of fresh air when you're like, okay, a couple we actually like and can see together for a good reason.
Yeah. I have this book I've had since I was, the 7th or 8th grade. It's called, I think I've mentioned it before, it's called The Friendly Shakespeare. It's basically just a summary of some of the performances of the plays and some of the themes of the plays and stuff like that. It's just a primer for people who aren't very familiar with Shakespeare. And for Much Ado About Nothing, I think she has one page on it, and it's basically Beatrice and Benedict are super delightful and see the play for them, but everything else about the play is super boring and not worth watching.
That's actually, like, that is actually a good argument, because you're right. Without their relationship, I'm not sure, because I get very upset with the whole, like, you know, Claudio Hero subplot. It's just very annoying and upsetting. So yeah, without them, I probably wouldn't enjoy that play. I mean, it's just so nice, like, especially in Shakespeare's time, to see a couple that actually has chemistry. And these plays, they're just so, like, you go for the language, you go for the poetics. It's rare that you actually have this chemistry in Shakespeare's plays, and I love it.
Well, I love the way they spar, because I always see them as a couple of equals, and it's not that I am super familiar with Taming of the Shrew, but from what I understand for that Kate is basically just put under the thumb of, you know, it's not the same. And so And you can totally correct me because I'm super familiar.
One way you interpret the ending of The Taming of the Shrew is that she's like, "Ha, you think I'm going to submit to you, but I'm not." But still, it's not an equal relationship. There's a power imbalance there. They don't respect each other. That's not the same with Benedict and Beatrice. Like they respect each other and they see each other as equals, and I just love it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's great because you know they have a previous relationship, so they've known each other for a long time.
Oh, and that's what I love.
It's like, oh good, you built up a rapport.
Yeah.
And now you understand each other as people.
Yeah, it's
Thank you.
I think that's part of the reason they're so great, is because it's not Benedict doesn't just walk into the house and go like, "Oh, she's so beautiful, but I can't let her know, so I'm gonna fight with her." It's like he comes back and she goes, "Oh hey asshole, what's up? You're back." And then
I know
they just start sparring.
I love that. It could have been so easy for Shakespeare to have them just meet and then just start, because that's what he did. He just has people like, you see that in As You Like It with Rosalind and Orlando, and you know, Viola and both Olivia and Orsino, that, you know, they just meet each other and then they start bantering. But the fact that these two characters have this interesting history that actually, like, I always interpreted that, like, Beatrice liked Benedict, but he turned her down. Like, I just always got that kind of, like, there was a history between them.
Yeah.
And that's why there was kind of, like, she was kind of like, "Oh, hey, asshole. Like, welcome back." And I just found that so interesting that they have this history. And then to top it off with the chemistry, it's just like, Shakespeare, why can't more of your hetero couples be like this?
It does. It works so well. And we were talking about how in a lot of the other plays, I often feel like the male characters don't deserve the female characters.
Yeah.
I like Orlando pretty well, but he's kind of a doofus compared to Rosalind. Bassanio's not worthy of Portia. Orsino's not really worthy of Viola.
No.
It just doesn't quite ever get there for me for a lot of those relationships. And for this one, they feel just like they are worthy of each other. And that's what I think really works about the two of them.
Yeah.
And it's really awesome.
And I also like that they're a little bit of an older couple, and you get that when everyone's like, Beatrice is going to die an old maid. And she's like, yeah, I am going to go up to, was she going to say heaven or hell? I can't even remember.
No, she's probably like our age.
Yeah. Well, but compared to Hero, who's young and virginal and a shy 14 ready to be wed, or however old she's supposed to be.
Yeah.
But like, Beatrice and Benedict are more mature about love and the way they talk about it, and they have a right to be jaded because they've been burned in the past, and that's a more real sense of what love is translated better.
It's more relatable.
Yeah. Which I like. But also, seeing the Kenneth Branagh version with Emma Thompson is just the best thing in the world.
It's so sad because they filmed that when they were married.
I know.
I was like, oh, I ship Emma Thompson and Kenneth Branagh too.
I have to say, just quick non sequitur, but about Emma Thompson, I saw an outtake of her from the fifth movie as Professor Trelawney, eating during Umbridge's speech and just failing at life, and I'm like, can you be my spirit animal?
I love Emma Thompson.
I identify with you on
She's
a personal
awesome.
Level.
Trelawney and Lockhart.
Oh my god, yeah.
Harry Potter ships. Oh no.
I can see it.
We can have a special conversation about
that. Yeah, I mean, the characters all... I mean, every production I've seen, the characters always have chemistry, but in that movie especially, I love Emma Thompson.
She's so sassy, and he's so stuffy, and it's beautiful.
And they just so clearly want each other, but can't bring themselves to admit it. It's so great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, and that's also an argument that some people argue, oh, did they only start liking each other because someone suggested it? And then it's like, oh, wait, that person actually likes me? Or, I think it was there the whole time. That's what I would like to think.
I think both of them were
history.
Just in super denial about it. And then the suggestion wasn't so much maybe I should like this person, but maybe I don't have to be afraid and reject them because they're not going to reject me anymore kind of thing.
Yeah.
So
I think it's one of those things where it's like, they both clearly like each other, but they're afraid to be the one that's been burned. Because at least if we go along with the argument that Beatrice has been, it's like, well, I'm not admitting my feelings again. That'll just hurt worse.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's like, well, I changed my mind, but now I'm afraid that she'll reject me because I rejected her in the first place.
Yeah.
Just shut up and like each other. Stupid.
Yeah, I have to say some of my favorite scenes are those two scenes where, like, their friends are, like, talking about them. And they're, like, they can get so creative. I mean, I know the movie gets creative with that, but, like, you can get so creative with, like, the way you portray that scene. Just so
again, going back to my high school experience, I actually also got to act that scene in high school.
Oh, nice.
And we took a paper plate and drew a tree on it. And then the person in our group playing Benedict, she, you know, put a little popsicle stick on it, and she'd hold the tree in front of her face and then peek around from behind it. And then when we turned, she'd pull the tree back in front of her face. So
that's cute.
Because we didn't have any props.
You can't see me, you can't see me.
It was a good time.
It would have also been funny if she was just, like, put her hands over her eyes, like, I'm not here, guys.
Yeah. Since they clearly know that Benedict and Beatrice are lurking. So.
Yeah, when we did it when I was in high school, and the way they played that scene is that the character, like, it was that the characters obviously knew that Benedict and Beatrice were, like, lurking around, so they would be, like, super loud, like, did you hear? She loves him entirely! Like, just, like, obviously fake, and, you know, people, like, crawling behind doors and, like, tumbling, like, doing, like, a barrel roll across, like, the stage, like... It was fun.
I do like that about the Joss Whedon production, where you have Benedict, like, actively rolling around in the grass and, like, hiding behind banisters and then, like, looking and looking back.
Oh, yeah, I haven't seen that one.
Oh, the Joss Whedon version is pretty good. Mm. Beatrice and Benedict are pretty good.
I thought they were solid, yeah. They're very, it's, like, a very elegantly filmed movie.
I mostly just kept going, this isn't a Metopsida cat bro.
I know.
But
I know.
That's not fair.
No, but they did a good job. And the landscaping was beautiful in that movie. But.
So, I guess, sticking on the comedies for a second here, Twelfth Night.
Good stuff. But, who should we start with? Shipping, or do you just want to talk about, like, the big...
Yeah, all
kind of like
that,
the big orgy we
that.
Just put in our head.
Yeah, our overarching framework.
Yeah.
Do you want to go ahead and explain that?
So, we were I guess Katie and Gabs were talking before I got here, because I was like, we should talk about Olivia and Viola, and then maybe Orsino on the side, and then also Sebastian, and then maybe Antonio. So it ended up just being, like, a quidrangle
in our minds. I think it just kind of becomes a huge polyamorous relationship. And I kind of love this solution. I totally think it works, because when I read the play, I mean, some of the interesting things going on, clearly of Olivia... In the play.
Yes, I know. I'm going to keep being like, yes, you talking about me?
Who is totally into Cesario, but then is kind of maybe also into Viola. But we, you know, there's kind of that hint there of that underlying, like, sexual tension thing going on. And I think I've mentioned this before, but at the end when she discovers they're twins and says, oh, wonderful, and...
Double the fun.
Yeah, exactly. I love interpreting it that way.
Yeah.
So right there, Olivia gets both Viola and Sebastian.
Mm-hmm. Which I'm totally live. I love that idea. It's like, we can be open about this, right, guys?
You know, Chino can come too, because, you know, he has that speech all about love. And love is like, what is it? Love is drink of...
Oh, if love...
Oh, if music be the food
right.
of love.
Yeah, music be
play
the food.
Play on. I will say, I like interpreting that Viola changes his interpretation of love by her own love for him, because at the beginning he's like, love is all about him and he's heartsick and he's sad, and then after Viola gives the speech about her sister who loved a man once, he's like, oh, so love is about being selfless and loving the other person, and it's not just about being heartsick. Whoa,
imagine
I'm mind blown.
Imagine.
So I like to think that he grows as a person throughout the course of his relationship with Viola, and then when it turns out she's in love with him, he's like, oh, I've secretly been harboring feelings for you too. Yay!
Yeah. But then you have that great thing where he was kind of maybe in love with someone he thought was a dude.
Right.
And then he goes, oh, thank God, you're a woman. Maybe that's not as bad for me as I thought.
Yeah.
So then I also love that Orsino could also have Viola and Sebastian. Basically, just everyone wants Viola and Sebastian.
Except Antonio, who just wants Sebastian.
Yeah, Antonio just wants Sebastian, but that's okay. I feel Sebastian also needs his, like, woman and man action. So you got all that going on. I do have a feeling in this five-way relationship, though, that Orsino and Olivia would never actually hook up with each other.
Yeah, I think they're both... They're kind of the same personality in in certain ways, that I feel like they're both, like, super possessive of their loved ones and are like, no, mine. Back off.
Well, I would also hope awkward. I would also hope Viola and Sebastian didn't hook up with each other.
Oh, also, yeah, good point. Yeah, but let's.
Yeah, that's not happening.
I am not pro that.
No,
I would much rather Olivia and Orsino get together than. Yeah. That's a no-no.
That was good to mention.
So they never have, like, while they might have a four- or five-way relationship, they never have all of them in the room at the same time.
Yes. Because
that would just lead to bad places that we don't want to think about. So we're going to keep it on the up and up.
Yeah. It's just an open relationship among
exactly.
The group.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah.
That happens between specific people at certain times.
Sister times. Wives and husbands.
Right.
Literally.
Yeah.
Except they'd all be equal.
Mm-hmm.
Yay! Okay.
Yes.
Well, speaking of Antonio.
Yeah, let's talk about him.
The Antonios.
What is with Antonio?
I still stand by the fact that Shakespeare knew someone named Antonio and just, like, kept popping him
Olivia's
in his
convinced.
Place. I am.
A man named Antonio who was in love with someone. Some dude.
Yeah.
Or maybe he was in love with Shakespeare, or Shakespeare was in love with him.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know.
Yeah, we did have that conversation about Shakespeare and Christopher Marlowe. Hooking up.
Maybe
so.
Antonio was secretly Christopher Marlowe the whole time. He was like, I'll put you in my plays under a fake name and you'll be in love with whoever I want you to be in love
yeah,
with.
Yeah, but then you can argue, then you have like the non-gay, as far as we know, Antonio is in Much Ado About Nothing and The Tempest. And so,
yeah.
it's like, I mean, but it is kind of strange that you do have these two Antonios that just have very strong feelings for another man.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, I think that's really interesting, too. Especially Antonio and Twelfth Night. Well, I guess especially both of them, because Antonio, Merchant of Venice, basically says, I will die for you.
Mm-hmm.
Antonio in Twelfth Night just speaks in such strong terms. He basically says, I love you and want to cleave myself to you. And Sebastian's like, all right.
Yeah. Sebastian's basically like,
okay,
that's cool, but I have to do something, so you stay here, and I'll go peace out. And then I'll come back for you.
Yeah. And when Viola rejects him, he gets pretty upset. So, you know, we've talked before about how you can't really say that they're gay because that would be improper to the time period.
Right.
But I don't know. Do you think Shakespeare intended them to be romantically in love with these men?
It's just really interesting. Like, why... I mean, especially Antonio is just such a one-off character. Like, it could have been, like, Sebastian literally could have been, like, saved by, you know, he was saved by this, like, pirate dude. And, you know, I mean, I guess Shakespeare just wanted him to have a scene partner so he wasn't completely talking to himself. But he didn't have to make that relationship as strong as he did, you know?
That's
because
true.
There are a lot of scenes where you just have two characters just kind of factually saying, okay, this is what's going on, like, blah, 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 and not, but, yeah, so he really didn't, I would make the argument that even though there really isn't a concept of gay, why would Shakespeare even include that if it weren't relevant, you know what I'm
mm-hmm,
saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
'cause it doesn't happen with Viola, like you say, she's just with the captain or some guy from the crew, and she's like,
yeah.
I'm on this new place, will you help me? And he's like, sure.
Yeah.
So, and yeah, it could have been two townspeople saying, like, did you hear a man washed ashore? And he was alone, and he was wearing ragged clothes. And then Sebastian comes in, like, this is I, the man that was on a washed ashore.
And they're like, oh, we'll help you. Thank you, good people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think you make a good point, Katie, that it's intentional in some way on Shakespeare's part.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then Antonio in Merchant of Venice and his relationship with Bassanio, I mean... Bassanio even gives away his wedding ring and is like, I love you so much, I'm
mm-hmm.
willing to give this away,
mm-hmm.
which super offends Portia. But that's quite a strong statement of friendship there.
Yeah. I don't know anything about male friendship in Shakespearean times, but I wonder about like it being held to
higher
standards.
I do know that in Shakespearean times, male friends could... hug and say I love you and those sorts of things, and it wasn't considered weird. It's the Cult of Friendship.
Yeah.
I'll try to find it in whatever book I've read about it in.
Yeah.
But James the First kind of helped popularize it, but at the time, very close male friendships where they expressed very deep feelings for each other was considered like the best kind of male friendship to have.
Okay. Yeah.
And it wasn't necessarily considered romantic in any way.
Mm.
Do you think it's because back then women were considered the intellectual and emotional inferiors to men, so that men, it wasn't encouraged for men to have intimate, like, emotional relationships with women, mm-hmm. because I feel like if you talk to a woman about your feelings, then that's making her your equal, and you need to be dominant, so you can't, you know, you can't show any signs of weakness to her. So I feel like in a way that bromance was more accepted mm-hmm. and popular, because it would have been like, oh, like, well, you're a sissy if you do show a woman mm-hmm. that side, whereas, like, if you show a man, like, that is your equal. Like, right. he is your intellectual and emotional equal. So you can't have a relationship that intimate with a woman because they have hysteria and they're stupid and just stuff yeah. like that. So it is kind of hard. Like, where'd you draw in the line between, like, a really intimate male relationship and a time where that was more acceptable, because men and women really didn't have these emotional relationships, like, and they didn't really marry for love, versus, like, are they actually gay?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Super interesting.
Because to a modern audience where men are not encouraged to do that sort of thing anymore, then it does come across as much more romantic.
Yeah.
Whereas really close female friendships, like Portia and Nerissa, or Rosalind and Celia, still just feel like friendships to most people, because women are still allowed to be really close with each other, and
yeah.
it's not considered weird.
Yeah,
so.
I wonder where that switch in view and value, like, why it's okay now for on a stage or in a show for two female friends to be super, super close, but it's, like, or considered by media as weird if, like, two guy friends are super, super close
yeah.
in the same way.
Then they have to secretly be gay.
Yeah. It's like, they can be, and that's great, or they don't have to be, and that's also great.
Okay, yeah, kind of tangent reminds me of whenever, like, TBS airs, or what is it, TNT, or whatever airs The Lord of the Rings, they always, like, they had, like, a teaser with, like, Frodo and Sam that was, like, secret lovers. And
oh, yeah.
It just kind of, like, whenever there are guys that, like, have that much of a bromance, it always, like, gets a little gay in
uh-huh.
modern
mm-hmm.
times.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, definitely. I do hope those Antonios find a nice man.
Yes. Maybe they'll find each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it can be like Taylor and Taylor when they got together. And they'll be happy.
They can move to wherever the Comedy of Errors takes place.
Mm-hmm.
And just confuse everyone.
All more wacky hijinks going on.
Or they can just form a cult of Antonios with all the other Antonios from Shakespeare's play.
All of the Antonios. Now that needs to be a fan fiction. Like, all of
the Island of Antonios. Actually, that's where they all go after the Tempest. Like,
yeah.
just the Antonios all get shipped there. And they all hang out with Ariel.
Yeah.
Who, for the sake of it, changes his name to Antonio, yeah. too. And they're, like, all there on the
just
island.
To be a bro.
And Caliban's like, go away! Oh, someone should write that.
Yeah. I would support that. I would donate $10 to that project in Kickstarter.
Maybe I'll do it. I'll have to find all the other Antonios that I don't know about yet
yeah.
in the Shakespeare canon.
We just
yeah.
all need to start writing Shakespeare fanfiction and
yes.
sell it to make a profit from Minerva.
Do you yeah. think Norton would take it? Be like, ancillary
materials
for your...
Do you think we'd get mythology? A six-figure advance if we insert Harry Styles in there just
oh,
for shits and giggles?
Yes.
So does anyone else have any thoughts on Shakespeare couples?
No, I think we ran a pretty good gamut. We got some history, we got some comedy, we got some tragedy, etc.
Etc.
Yeah.
We just missed the romances, but I don't... It's cool.
Yeah, well, yeah. Right. A conversation for another day, as we like to say.
Yeah.
So, if you would like to check out more of our podcasts, you can find Bardolatry and the rest of the Minerva Magazine Podcast Network
mm-hmm.
on www.minervamag.com. You can find us on Twitter at MagMinerva. You can find us on Facebook and Tumblr. Please feel free to leave a comment on the website, tweet us. If there's any particular topic you'd like to hear us talk about, or if you'd like to join the conversation, whatever way is perfectly fine with us. We'd love to hear from you. And I think with that...
I think we're good.
Yeah.
I think this ship has sailed.
Now we'll enter the friendship.
Yes.
Alright, bye everyone.
Bye. I think we should. Yeah. Harry Styles gets transported back in time to the island of Antonios.
And hijinks ensue. So does anyone else have any thoughts on Shakespeare couples?
No, I think we did a pretty, we ran a pretty good gamut. We got some history, we got some comedy, we got some tragedy, etc.
etc.
Yeah.
We just missed the romances, but I don't, it's cool.
Well, a conversation for another day, as we like to say.
Yeah.
So, if you would like to check out more of our podcasts, you can find Bardolatry and the rest of the Minerva Magazine Podcast Network
mm-hmm.
on www.minervamag.com. You can find us on Twitter at MagMinerva. You can find us on Facebook and Tumblr. Please feel free to leave a comment on the website, tweet us. If there's any particular topic you'd like to hear us talk about, or if you'd like to join the conversation, whatever way is perfectly fine with us. We'd love to hear from you. And I think with that,
I think we're good.
Yeah.
I think this ship has sailed.
Now we'll enter the friendship.
Yes.
All right, bye everyone.
Bye.